let's call the order of the August 14th, 2014 Planning Commission meeting. We have one main item on the agenda. Are there any changes? A motion to approve the agenda.
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Curtis is a second. Bringing the first. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes.
I move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
I'll second that one.
Brendan and Dick with a second. Any changes or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So with us tonight is our brand new Commissioner Curtis Von Trapp. Welcome officially to the North Bend Planning Commission.
Thank you.
Elizabeth got her first turn at our last meeting. So I don't know if you'd like to go around and give us some introductions and who would like to go first. Maybe how long you've been in the city, volunteer efforts.
I'm the first since you're looking this way.
Yes.
Brendan Elwood, been here since 2008. I've been involved with the community, especially over at Sideview Community Park there, on the commission there. Other than that, kids attend school here. Probably had, is your wife a teacher?
Yes.
Yes. Von Trapp.
Yeah.
My daughter, Piper Lumber.
Okay.
Then, let's see, other than that, much more to say.
Not as busy as the Planning Commission is right here. It's a love of mine. I say I've been in the area. I've lived in Bellevue for most of my career at the warehouse because I had a dual role going down to Butter Way or up here to St. Paul, where my office was. But so I started living in the middle.
Makes sense.
But when I had my first shot, I moved right up here as fast as I could years ago. And I'm so glad I'm here.
Yeah.
My name is Gary Fancher, and I've been in North Bend since 2003, and been on the Planning Commission since 2008, I think, or 9.
That's right.
My fourth year, I think. Got two kids, two boys, 2 and 4. Spare time is limited, so do some community events and some activities, and prior to this, I was on the Elk Management Group. Some other like community events with politics in town.
Okay. So. Yeah. Heard a little bit about me tonight that we were connected. Elizabeth Gildersleeve, I've been living in the valley for about 20 years, but the family's been here for since in North Bend since about 47, and in the valley in general since World War II and my grandpa brought everybody out here. And I work in Snoqualmie. Do quite a bit with flood insurance, which is what kind of got me interested in sharing some of my knowledge there, because I know it's going to become an issue going forward. And was raised to lead in public service, so involved with a couple of organizations in town, but keep busy.
As for me, I moved to the Valley in 2002. Just happened my wife got a job at Waskowitz, and I landed here. Previous work. Or previous volunteering, like Gary, I've got two young kids, so my free time's limited. So I was part of the Snow Valley Indoor Playground over at Sideview. Did 2 years, worked as secretary, and then facilitator coordinator, trying to get volunteers. So that was a challenge. And then now I'm also coaching my daughter's soccer team with the Snoqualmie Valley Youth Soccer. I've been working up at Echo Glen for the last 12 years, ever since I moved here as a counselor there. But yeah, like Elizabeth and like we talked about at the city council meeting, you know, my parents modeled this for me and I knew and wanted to be a part of, you know, just community participation for a long time. And saw this ad in the paper, or the article in the paper, I was like, well, now's the time. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, welcome, and thanks for volunteering. Awesome. So next item on the agenda is the public comment on non-agenda items. Anybody from the public wishing to comment? Mr. Bridgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Travis Bridgman, residing north in 713 Ogle Avenue Northeast. And we talked quite a bit about signs. I've spoken about signs in several commissions and committees, and walking around town and being involved. And it's come a long way. King County's participated. Sign News participated. We've been spicing up or making our signs more credible and more knowledgeable. Tonight I want to briefly talk about probably the most important sign in our city, the founding sign in our city, is our zoning map. And if we want people to come by, that is the first thing they're going to see as an advertiser. So that's our credibility. That's who we are, how our city operates, how it's laid out. That's the actual foundation, foundingness of all other signs in our community. So that being said, I like to see it a lot more credible, knowledgeable. Where are the collector roads, multicolored for density, either for commercial and for residential and for an industrial, just really make it just flowing with information. Also, public parks, is there walking trails at the public parks? Let's outline them. Is there collector roads for walking? Is there collecting roads for biking? I want to know how to move from one park to another on a bike just from looking at our founding map. And then those places would be rocking awesome if there's more maps, you know, more information to lead us. But this is our face, actually. This is the face of our city, is our zoning map, is our founding, and that's what I like to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Okay. Moving on to item number four, zoning regulations addressing low-density residential density and setbacks, following the ordinance 1530 adopted by the council on July 1st, 2014. So, Mike, do you want to start with some opening comments?
So, I think all of you were, I don't, Curtis, do you have the history on this? Were you here when this was previously considered by the Planning Commission?
No, when you actually went over the 1530, but I was here when kind of the issue was introduced.
Okay, yeah, so just the idea generally is that the council has felt that some of the new development in town has seemed too dense, and so looking to make the lots a little bit larger and the associated setbacks and bulk and dimensional standards. And so an emergency ordinance was passed by the council, and which provided some interim regulations that took effect upon adoption of that ordinance. And it was subsequently provided to the Planning Commission to consider those draft amendments to find out, are those appropriate? Do we need to consider other things? And the Planning Commission then takes that and makes a recommendation back to Council. So that's the process that we're in right now. It was introduced by Jenna, I think, two meetings ago. And then for the last two meetings, the Planning Commission has considered it. Wanted to continue with that tonight. And then we have one more meeting that we'll have to schedule a public hearing at our next Planning Commission meeting. And after that public hearing, we hope to have the Planning Commission's recommendation to take forward to the Council. We did take a look at it as staff, and we felt comfortable with the amendments that were provided previously via the emergency ordinance. We had just one minor recommendation to change with that, and that is regarding the side yard setbacks. The emergency ordinance had established an 8-foot side yard setback on each side for a total of 16 feet. And what we would suggest is to provide additional flexibility to have 5 feet on one side for a total of 15 feet, so that you can have 5 feet on one side, 10 feet on the other side, or 8 feet, 7 feet. But what that does is it allows you to shift the house over to one end of the lot, so you've got a more functional space on the other side. So maybe you want to have a little garden or a play area on your side yard. That would enable it rather than the strict 8-8. It's one less foot side yard setback, but with that distance, it doesn't seem like that would be very significant. So that is the one staff recommendation for changing it. And other than that, maintaining what was provided via the emergency ordinance.
And before we get into questions, Mike, did that result in a total square footage for a lot?
You mean the one less?
With 5 what? And 15?
It would depend on the depth of the lot to determine that.
Can you just repeat that? So it was 8 and 8.
Yeah.
I'm trying to sketch it out so I can visualize.
Can you leave that green, Mike, because I'm going to reference
it.
I'll draw two lots here. So the ordinance that came through council established, and this is not at all the scale, that you
on
have
your planner,
8 feet
should be
on
right.
Each side, total of 16 feet. And this is because this is not the scale, you can't see that side yards are pretty narrow. Most houses these days and lots are pretty deep, so you get this very long strip of not very usable space. So the idea is instead of that, we would allow 5 feet on one side, which is the current side minimum side yard setback, but on both sides. But then to make up for that, you have 15 feet total. So then that becomes 10 feet minimum. And that allows you, obviously, more space to work, a little more flexibility for your layout of your house as well. You can have more windows and opening. It's a nice open space rather than just the side of somebody else's house. And then that's more the garage side. So just a minor amendment, but it provides a lot more flexibility.
So the house that has the 2 8s, can they go 5 to the right and 10 to the left?
Right now, no. It establishes 8 feet, one side, 16 feet total, so that means that each side needs to be 8 feet. You can go beyond that. These are minimum setbacks. Mm-hmm.
And then what you're saying is instead of that, we can have a total of 15, but a minimum of 5 on the
on
lowest
one side,
side,
yeah.
Maximum, well.
Minimum of 10 feet then
on
the
other
side.
Side. So in that case, we could have, if you, and you don't need to do this, but we could imagine that the 2 8s, and your proposed change would be the 8 on the right could be a 5, and the 8 on the left could be a 10. Mm-hmm. So actually they can move their houses closer together so they both have a wider side yard.
Yeah.
Or they could both adjust, say, to the left side of your diagram.
Right. But the distance between homes is not going to differ except for 1 foot than what it would be under that scenario because you're still getting that total of 15 feet, almost 16 feet. When you get a whole series of homes in a row, it's not going to look substantially different under this scenario than it would under this scenario because we're just talking a difference of 1 foot.
Okay.
And the reason we went with 15 rather than 16 is it's just an easier measurement to go in increments of 5.
Sure. Well, what I'm wondering is, would there be a restriction then on, say, this lot has a 5 and a 10, is the restriction then the house next to it could have?
They
has
could
to have a 10 that adjusts, that abuts to the 5?
They could put it on either side. So you could get this scenario where you get 2 that are each of the 5 feet.
Okay.
But then you're going to get wider on the other side.
Sure.
So they would stagger. And
So then likewise, the third lot over could have the 10 here and then the 5 there. Okay. So in that situation, I would think that visually you would see grouping space. So even though we're only shaving it off a foot, the 8x8 is kind of things are equally spaced out, whereas in this scenario, there is a potential to have some sense of micro-crowding or something, visually speaking.
Or a side entrance garage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into any more questions, I'm just going to ask if anybody from the public wishes to speak on this. State your name for the record.
This is John Davis. So, what Mike said about the 5 foot area is really important. That, from a building perspective, dealing with increments of 8 is just odd, and the guys that are out there in the field aren't. It's just easier to deal with 5s and 10s at every level. And then on the, typically with the 5 and the 10 scenario is real common. We deal with it in a lot of option to have a little more space on one side or the other. Ordinarily, we're going to put that house right in the middle of the lot, so you're going to have 7.5 on either side. But, you know, oftentimes, and we've got a lot of plans where we have a side load garage, is a great example. In that case, we want to push the house all the way so it's 5 feet from one side, so we have more room space to get in into that garage. So having that flexibility of being able to move that house around the lot is more important. And also, it does create, I think, more modulation, too. Because while the minimum space between houses is 10 feet between houses, you can also end up with 15 or 20 feet between houses, which when you're looking down, you know, a long street, is pretty noticeable. When you've got like what we have now, where side yards are all 5 feet and we build right to the side yard, if all the houses are square to the street, it can look like one giant apartment. You know, like, I think one of the offensive things was at Cedar Falls, where you've got all the alley houses right out on the street. They're 10 feet from the street, and they're, anyway, they're all 10 feet apart. And one of the things, so I was a little surprised. I thought you were also possibly going to suggest allowing for the 10-foot front yard setback to enable us to have side yard garages. That's another thing that we talked about here at this last meeting. But right now, the new regulations require 20-foot setbacks as a minimum, and current regulation is 20-foot setback, but that to the face of the garage. But components of the structure can be as close as 10 feet. And again, if you do that with my, it helps to have looking down the street again to reduce that sense of apartment-ness, if you will. So that's all I got.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak?
Just got one question, Travis Bridgman, North Bend. And I'm curious if the house is shifted, if it's straight level at 10 feet, what if it's shifted at a 20-degree angle, or does that?
A setback would just be measured to the nearest point of the house from the property line.
There you go. Well, I'd add, if you drive through Tannerwood or through Maloney Grove, you'll see what we commonly do if we can without losing lots, is we put our lots at a 15-degree angle, and then when you drive into the community, you see the front of all the houses as you drive in instead of this giant block of houses. That's a really good planning technique. It would be really difficult to write the code around it, but it is a good technique. Mm-hmm.
And that is easier, again, if you've got the flexibility to move the house on
way
within
easier.
The lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Seeing no one else from the public, I'll close the public comment period. So anybody from the Planning Commission want to go first?
As far as
questions, thoughts?
Well, that was my main question was, because I can understand and respect the 8x8, but I could also see a sea of sameness when everything is symmetrical and the geometry is such that it's just that perfect 16-foot space dimension. But I could also see, you know, some element of this house being too close to that house, because 10 feet, while it seems like a lot, doesn't always, you know, it's not really a lot. But I like the... Personally, I like the flexibility of having just a total of 15 with a minimum on one side being 5 and the other one being 10 or whatever. Because that gives the builders a little bit more flexibility to make it more of a unique lot design. Ergo, the entire community would have the potential of having a little bit more unique configuration. So that's just my immediate snapshot of this.
I was driving around the community last week, and I paid particular attention to Cedar Falls. It's a brand new community. It's almost fully built out. The streets are all landscaped. And I was trying to visualize that community 20 years out, when the streets that are in the right-of-ways, shoulders are basically going to be converging. You go into like Forster Woods, which has about 24 years old now. John. The streets that are wide up where the trees are very mature, but there's still daylight between sides, which allows for oversized trucks, whatever delivery trucks coming through without taking off the lower limbs of those trees. I see something different going on with the more narrow communities where just commercial traffic going through those streets, they're just going to be causing havoc with those trees. It's going to be a continuous cost to the city to maintain what I think is an ongoing problem with contact by commercial vehicles and public vehicles on those crowns of those trees that are beginning to close in. And they will all close in. You can just see it happening. So I'm nervous about how that's going to look when the community is built out. It's going to look much different. I think that there's going to be a lot of feeling in the Cedar Falls community of a very wooded environment. I think there was a story in the paper today or yesterday about the urban forest disappearing in Seattle. I think in this type of communities, there's going to be a lot of feeling of trees and vegetation because of the closeness of all the environments together. It's going to look and feel that way, but it may also create more of an overly tight feeling. You go into an older timber stand where there's no daylight, you can see what happens. A lot of things are shaded out. That may not happen in these smaller communities, but there's a possibility of becoming almost overwhelmingly impacted by overgrowth vegetation. So we need to consider that. What's going to happen to the roads with the roots, the sidewalk with the roots, all that is going to come into play. So I urge caution that we think more differently about how we're going to landscape in our communities if we're going to have these narrow streets. I'm not in favor of getting any narrower on the streets. I'd rather see the streets get wider. And if we have to, maybe cut back on the lot size. But I think the streets now are getting they're perilously too close, too narrow.
To provide some context on that, the council did provide a recent amendment to our low-impact development street standard, which is what Cedar Falls was developed under, to add an additional parking lane. So the new standard for the minimum under that scenario would be an additional 9 feet beyond what you see now. And then just also for context about the urban canopy, with that size of a street, which is very consistent with what you see in Seattle, you see a lot of Seattle neighborhoods that have the planter strip with the street trees, very often very mature, big street trees, with that lane of width. So if you can picture a Seattle neighborhood, that's kind of what I would imagine that this would feel like in 50 years, with that level of scale.
Including the Buckland sidewalks.
Well, actually, one of the requirements that we have in our landscape code is that a root barrier be provided along the edge of the curb and along the edge of the sidewalk to protect those. So we do have problems in the Forester Woods neighborhood, and maybe also in the in your neighborhood, where sidewalks are buckling, but I don't think root barriers were installed in those contexts.
Okay, good.
Elizabeth, do you have anything you'd like to raise up?
Well, my main thing was to go back and take a look at some of the existing community or mini communities that we have and get an idea of what kind of typical lot size we were talking about. And I guess I was actually surprised when you look at it overall. I was thinking that there were a number of lots in Silver Creek and in Old Sideview that were of similar size to some of these developments that are going in. And I discovered that most of them were between 2,000 and 3,000 square feet larger. And I guess my concern with this, I'm happy with the flexibility, actually, I should say, on the setbacks. But I do get concerned that when we're talking about the overall perspective of what we want to see going on out there, that we're talking about maintaining the quality of what we have, everything outward is very different because the lot sizes are smaller. I was really surprised by the 5,000. I also did a drive around and was really surprised to see the effects of some of those very small lot sizes where we have the 5,000 square feet lots. So I think that my concern is in that. I don't know how much it applies to this emergency ordinance. However, in terms of minimum lot sizes of house, I'm leaning toward the some of what we have is a little too small if we're looking at maintaining the feel that we have right now.
So supporting addressing what's provided in the ordinance to provide mm-hmm. it up to 7,500 or 8,000.
Right. And I don't know. Again, you know, I was just literally going into King County's IMAP. And pulling up overviews where I looked at Forrester Woods, a rough vision of Silver Creek, and then side view, and taking a look at what the lot sizes were. And you can get kind of a general idea of what sort of where the buildings are on those lots. And thinking that some of this question about having a minimum lot size makes sense. In hearing a bit more. I actually was kind of wondering if we have something that tells us what the average lot size is in these existing
in those neighborhoods. You might be more familiar. Do you know what the size of your lot is in the side neighborhood?
Do not.
Well, there are
but they're, all, they're going to vary from place to place. And the nice mm-hmm. part about that is there's a lot of different variables. I mean, I've got I'd say medium-sized lot, but my neighbor behind me has got huge lot. I mean, put three different ones. I mean, so there's different lot sizes there.
Just to offer a guess, I would suggest that you're probably around 8,000 square feet.
I would think so.
Lots,
yeah.
Which is what the minimum average is in the interim ordinance here.
Well, I suppose one of the other things is that when we're looking at Silver Creek in particular, you have larger lot sizes and typically lower square footage on the structures that are on there. And it creates a little bit of a different view. But as I was, because when I was initially looking at this, this lot sizes, I was kind of like, okay, it doesn't seem like a really big deal. But as I took a look at what we have already and what has been built recently, we do have some substantially smaller lots with rather large homes built on them. So I guess I'm looking for a little bit more information on what we're talking about on average lot sizes across the city.
Well, it's really hard to say across the city because there's so much variation. But if you look at, I think if you look at the Sideview neighborhood and the Forrester Woods neighborhood, both of those are probably going to be in the same range as what you see with the
so the newer construction regulations. Is going to be very close to the proposed.
Yeah, what you're seeing in Tannerwood, for example, or within Cedar Falls, those are going to be more dense than this. Those are averaging 6,500 square foot minimum. But John's maybe a little bit bigger.
Well, John, if the Tannerwood, according to this, the average is 7,428. Is that correct? So,
actually, history-wise, the zoning used to be all based on area size of lots. It used to be 9,600 square foot was the zoning that was predominant in North Bend. So, Forrester Woods was 9,600. So was New Sideview. I remember if that was average or minimum. It might have been average.
I think it was average because there's some that are smaller than that. But it, I mean, to me, that's okay. The problem, you know, if it's different, I mean, you walk in and there's different sizes. Most of the smaller lots are the smaller houses, you know. So.
But we don't see that so much in the new developments. It's typically very similar construction with variation in lot size, rather than variation in lot size with variation in structure size.
Yeah, we have impervious surface and lot coverage requirements that establish the maximum amount that you can cover the lot with, but we don't have any kind of cap on home size or square footage. So typically, developers are going to respond to the market, and people generally
don't
want bigger homes these days.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say as far as what we're talking about, I it made sense to round it for, you know, for the builders. Five instead of eight certainly makes a lot of sense to me. And my concern would be more with, you know, I think if we're addressing what the council brought up, you know, maintaining the rural character in these new developments, and like Ms. Gildersleeve, I just happened to be in Old Sideview, which is a place I never go, and I mean, it was beautiful over there. It felt very rural, as where I live in Silversky. I don't go to the Cedar Falls, and I wouldn't really want to, and I think that's what we're targeting here, but I feel like my concern will be more focused on the maximum building cover, like the percentage there, as well as the lot size. And I think we're going to achieve more of our goals targeting those. I mean, I have a lot to learn, but from what I'm gathering so far, like that would seem to be more of the focus areas. And correct me if I'm wrong, please, because if I'm on the wrong track, you know, I can be back on now. But like these numbers, it really just depends on the size of the lot in my mind, like how I'm understanding it.
So are you suggesting something beyond what's provided in the...
No, I don't know if... I'm sorry, I cut you off, go ahead.
Well, let's go to that real quick to look at that while you're... So right now, the maximum building cover...
What page are you on?
15? I'm looking for it here.
On page 13?
Okay, yeah, 13. So currently, you can have up to 40% building cover, 45% if you have an accessory dwelling unit, and that's being reduced to 35%, as well as increasing the size of the lot. So, yeah.
I mean, it's hard for me to, you know, really conceptualize a new certain community where, you know, this was the average. I'm a visual person, so
yeah.
That would help.
Well, we did have a comparative chart.
Yeah, there was a chart that showed where the council came up with the nut. I mean, we basically took it out of the air. Didn't
pass it around.
Okay. Which seems to... I can put this one. Thank you.
The maximum building cover is typically... Well, it actually ranges quite a bit, but 35% is a pretty common figure that you see across the board there. Ranges from 35% up to 55%.
From perspective of our typical building footprints, 50 by 50, falls somewhere in that 2,500 square feet, so 7,500 square foot lot is going to fit that
33%.
But that is a kind of a critical number. If you start squishing that lot coverage more, it becomes much more challenging.
And that's what you were doing. I'm sorry, are you building in the Cedar Falls? Or is it you're over in Tannerwood?
Tannerwood.
Okay. And that's what you're doing in Tannerwood?
Like our product, my company's product, is typically that size.
Okay.
I mean, I've been building out here since 86.
Yeah, I understand.
Still in Fort Woods and
No, I'm not proposing anything different, and I don't know if we've spoke to those specific topics. As my understanding, we're just kind of focusing on this right now.
Well, that's a part of the amendment. So
okay, the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. So the amendment with the lot coverage goes down from 40% of the lot coverage to 35%. That basically means the same area of house because the lot is getting bigger.
Right. Which seems to be the goal. That's going to have the biggest impact, I guess, when I picture it, as far as not seeing these block houses as having larger lots to space out those. Mm-hmm. But it seems to make sense to me.
Like on the, so I understand what you said over at Agnes, a lane back into the street, but are you taking away sidewalks or sidewalks will still stay?
No, sidewalks remain.
Both sides?
Mm-hmm.
Mike, I want to make sure I didn't miss anything, but with this proposal, is there any change to park requirements?
No.
No.
requirements would remain. The parks are open space and parks together have to be a minimum of 5% of the total net area of the development. So net area means you can take out your critical areas, and then what's left after that, 5% of that has to go to parks. So that wouldn't change.
Okay. Is that a city requirement or is that a
city requirement?
So
can we look, can we amend that without penalty?
That's not what's open right now, so we have to do a separate process for that.
But are we being required to have park space by some other authority?
No.
Some commitment, financial commitment?
No, we have policies that talk about providing park space in our comprehensive plan that those policies, that regulations are consistent with.
So, the last meeting, I made these notes on the board, and just for Curtis and Brendan, who weren't here, Tom Meager sent out the July 16th memo with the four recent home developments, and that was in our packet. And so the average lot size that was developed is 7,063 square feet. The average home size is 2,917 square feet. So that's what's being built recently. And so I was figuring, you know, a 3,000 square foot home is 40 by 75 just to make something nice and easy to work with. Mm-hmm. Okay? If we had a 10 foot side setback and we have 20 foot in front and 25 in rear, it becomes this measurement, which is 7,200 square feet. Okay? So if we were having a 10 foot and 10 foot on each side, if we had 15 feet on both sides and the 20 front and 20 rear, it's 8,400 square feet. So their proposal right now as it stands is 8,000 square feet.
Lot size.
Yeah, lot size. Sorry.
As I pointed out last time, your initial premise of a 40 by 75 foot building footprint is in error. You're not going to have a 75 foot deep house. You're going to have a 50 foot wide by 50 foot deep, maybe 50 by 55 foot deep house, but it's that initial, that front width that really defines this whole matter. So,
no, I hear you, and I was doing it for ease of calculation, so not accuracy, but it's, I forget what I put down. 96 times 105 is about 10,000 square foot lot, I think, which is more square.
So a quick takeaway is our average lot is 7,000 square foot. The proposal is bump that by a grand. You're suggesting go up by 14. You're suggesting that the proposal may not be large enough.
I'm saying if you have a 10 foot on either side, side width, or you have a 15 foot side width, and your lot size is big enough to allow side entry garages, mm-hmm. or to stagger your house at an angle, your lot could be big enough to permit that, but still have the required setbacks met. My thought around why have a bigger lot and why have the required setbacks is, one, your personal sanity. I'm talking to you at a normal voice. You're at least 5 feet away from me. Okay. If I'm yelling at my kids, my wife, whatever it might be, how many neighbors are going to hear that? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of just your privacy, your hearing what your neighbors are doing, you know, all those things come into play. So the further space, I think, is better for living and cohabitation. I think the other thing that I'm concerned about when I have a 25-foot rear yard, mm-hmm. is I'm going to have a back patio of 8 to 10 feet.
Right.
Put my grill and a table on there. And then during halftime at the Seahawks game, my son wants to go out and make believe he's Russell Wilson and throw a bomb. Mm-hmm. As long as my neighbor doesn't have a fence, I can do that. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I got to run down to the neighborhood park. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, how do you live on these lots and what can you do on these lots? And if we have a large large percent of our population, the average age is 30-something. Mm-hmm. The average family is 3 or 4. Are we meeting the demand of our community with those size lots?
Well, I think from a planning perspective, one other thing to keep in mind is affordability.
Mm-hmm. That's just where I was going to go, because what's price per square footage? You know, if we increase the lot size, I mean, you're going to pay price per square footage for your house, but are we going to start pricing ourselves too high because there's so much real estate?
Well, I'll give you the link. 60% of Seattle's land area is taken up by single-family zoning. The three categories they have are for 5,000 square feet, 7,200 square feet, and 9,600 square feet. My question is, if I come from Seattle to North Bend, should I get the same size lot or bigger?
Mm-hmm. Well, I keep coming back mentally as we're talking, especially, and that's a good point, is we're trying to come up with one standard area. But if our goal is to maintain a rural feeling, but also to have some variety, then is having just one footprint the right way to go about it? I know we have the average lot size is 7,000 square feet, but maybe there's different categories or different tiers of lots that in certain areas can have an 8,500 square foot lot, and other areas maybe a 7,000 square foot lot. Is there any sort of restrictions that we're looking at as far as we're placing on our builders and you know, and just the future development? So that's such that everything is now 8,000 square feet and square, and it's the geometry problem that I keep coming back to.
Yeah, bear in mind these are minimums. So, and we're eliminating in the proposal the maximum lot size. So if somebody wanted to come in and do 12,000 square foot, 18,000 square foot lots in a bigger neighborhood, that is a possibility.
It supports the bigger home and still meets setbacks.
Well, and I guess to kind of add on to what you were saying, you know, I think it's important to have a diversity, right? I mean, we need it for a diverse workforce who we want to be local. And, you know, I mean, that's in my mind, that's part of the rural character is, you know, living or working where you live. But if people can afford to live here, you know, we still... Anyway, my point is, if we make this blanket for all the areas, you know, in zoning, then we're going to have a pretty homogenous town in the future, you know, for... however long this is in existence. So is there, and maybe we just need to relook at the zoning, which I know we were doing before the ordinance was imposed, you know, so redistricting that to have this applied to, you know, maybe the majority of areas or the outlying areas, whereas some of the others that we want to change or add, you know, that this doesn't necessarily qualify and maybe something that's, that has the previously existing sizes and you know, and dimensions where we want that to apply.
Yeah, because to me this is a reaction to an emotional feeling that there's some sense of crowding, and that's a legitimate feeling. But the one feeling that's not being addressed here is that there may be people who live in those areas that are perfectly fine with that square footage. They like the closeness. They like the proximity. They like not having to maintain and deal with a huge yard, right? So I feel that there's a voice there that's missing at this table, or at least within this consideration. I don't know if it's a large voice or not, but I do know people that feel that way, so it's a legitimate concern.
Cedar Falls was not a slow-selling community. So.
And it went fast, and I remember that was a point that you or somebody else had brought up, that these areas that are the smaller lot sizes have been going quick, so it's not as though they're sitting vacant and I think that sells its point.
So, Mike, at our last meeting, we were pretty much resolved that we needed more than one residential zone, and we thought we were going to talk about land use at this meeting, but it wasn't on the agenda. I think if it makes sense, we focus on just what we have in front of us, and that when we open up our land use policy, we create some other zones that address a selection of housing needs that are for some who desire the lots and some who want a nice home with a smaller lot. It's just, it makes sense to have that diversity in our housing stock, right?
It does.
So, I don't think in one low-density residential it can address so much.
Well, but it doesn't allow you to concentrate the more dense development closer to the city core and then expand outward. But my understanding also from the last meeting is that that's after we deal with this emergency, we're supposed to move forward.
Yeah, that's right. We've got the rest of the comp plan. The land use element is the thing that we're currently working on. So this is specific to the low-density residential zone, but you can consider suggesting to the council other additional amendments to other zones.
Is there a way to, if the concern is so great and it's a large voice of council and unanimous voice, I think, to have it as a temporary
Well, not temporary. What's in place right now is temporary, but what you're recommending to the council would be
permanent. But what I'm saying is that while we finish our zoning, we institute this we keep this temporary. So any permits that come in now are held by these standards, by our emergency standards. Because to your point, and to what I think I'm hearing and what I've heard before, and maybe even a point that was brought up the last meeting, was that we were, in a sense, already defining our zoning and looking at that. And maybe some of these answers could be addressed in that process. And then that due diligence would then yield us a more permanent solution as opposed to a reactionary one that's saying, hey, look, we're on the clock now because we feel bad. We don't want any more permits coming in to make us feel crowded, so let's react to that. So I guess what I'm asking is, if we keep the emergency ordinance in place until we resolve our whole rezoning, and then we resolve some of those issues in that process, that
would be nice. I would need to check back with legal, but I imagine that you can't just keep an emergency ordinance in place forever.
I would agree.
What might be better is for you to just act on what you believe is correct now, recommend that to council, mm-hmm. but maybe reconsider this through the process of the overall comp plan amendments, and if there's tinkering that you feel like is appropriate, to bring that in your final comp plan recommendation to council later on.
Let me, there's one council member weigh in on what you're trying to say. The interim ordinance has got, we've got to get this down and get something consistent so the developers have a map mm-hmm. for the area. Does that mean that when you go through your zoning that you don't recommend a zone and a different development criteria, so much similar to what the cottage homes mm-hmm. kind of did? That would probably be the way you would be able to move forward on that. I think the council would entertain that and take a look at that. Yes, if that helps, hopefully I'm clarifying. But this cannot be an interim ordinance. You know, the goal of the council is to put in a permanent ordinance so that there's not any, you know, nebulous zoning or area for the developers to make it more consistent. So we were very concerned that when we did this, we were creating a slippery slope for a lot of developers and a lot of concern and a lot of money that people had. So I think that's where the council's leaning towards as to how you could address down the line, taking a look and saying, gee, you know, I'd like to see a denser mm-hmm. product here. Creating a zone similar to a cottage zone, whatever you call it, would be your way of handling.
So, Mike, is the other thing I think is important for everybody to know is the 600 homes that are permitted but not yet built are mm-hmm. built under the current standards.
There's a lot that has been vested now, which means those regulations that are in effect prior to this, mm-hmm. they have come under. And so they can build at that previous rate of the minimum 5,000, minimum average 6,500. So you'll see a lot more growth that looks like what looks like Cedar Falls. Before the new developments under this regulation start to happen.
And did we determine that it was legitimate to have an emergency ordinance based on this particular criteria? I know that I asked that, but I wasn't at the last meeting on that. I think it should have been addressed, right? Because I know legal counsel said that it would be okay, but it didn't seem to me like a citizen harm, like some... includes
what's the emergency.
Yeah, what's the emergency, and what qualifies an emergency to have this in place.
If legal has reviewed that and said that that's sound,
then I'm going to defer
to legal's opinion on that.
All right.
Anybody want to entertain a motion?
Well, you can't make an action on this until after the public hearing, which we have scheduled for your next meeting.
But you're looking for amendments or adjustments.
Yeah, is there anything that you see that you like to change? Because what we're doing from here is we're noticing what your recommendation is in the paper, in the public process, so that people see and can come and respond and comment at the public hearing.
So do we need to officially do something about the staff recommendation?
Not today.
Yeah, well, you could, if somebody could make a motion that that become the Planning Commission's recommendation for moving forward.
Can we bake in any areas that should be more low and high density into this? So like what you're saying, instead of doing it over the long term, anything near city, downtown?
Not through this. This is specific to the low-density residential zone.
Welcome to the political process.
So right now, the average lot size that we're targeting is 8,000 square feet, up from 6,500. Minimum lot size, 7,500, up from 5,000. However, Gary, but you're proposing the 8,400 up there.
Not proposing. Just saying, if you changed the setbacks instead of 10 feet, that you had 15 feet on the side and 20 and 25 in the rear, that becomes an 8,400 square foot lot.
So that is an average. In the 15 is what we're targeting here.
But in my scenario, it would be 15 on each side.
I see. Is drastically different.
It's
double.
Yeah.
Then you're starting to look like
instead
Wood
of maximum
River.
20, right. You would have 30 feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
You put wide lots.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 85 by 100, 8,500 square feet.
First words of the time, 7,500 lots. Can I just ask the really important considerations is front yard setback? So that because we like a mixture in our product, having that side yard garage, without a reduction to 10 feet in the front yard setback, on at least some percentage, we could not do a side load garage. We would not work on the garage.
So what John's talking about the side load garage is it still comes off the front, but the home, you got your home here, and
the L garage is the configuration.
Something like this. That's not right, it's the other way around. So the garage comes in and does this. Mm-hmm. And if you push the whole house back 20 feet, it becomes unfeasible.
So the house ends up being so deep with the garage, like that. So then the back of the house ends up in the backyard, except that it doesn't fit on the lot.
But the proposed is 20 feet.
Yeah. So consideration the Planning Commission could consider would be to allow something like 15 feet minimum front yard setback with a side entry garage or side load garage. I'm not sure. Is that the terminal?
Is what I'm suggesting, and maybe it's only, even if it's only 10% of the lots, it would, you know, again, it helps modulate that front scenario and gives us more options. Mm-hmm. Options for different product, and in the end, having a variety of product is
key. So my thought, though, on that point, if you have a driveway which is supposed to allow two cars to park, and a length of a vehicle is 8 feet, that's 16 feet. Right? So your driveway should be at least 16 feet long.
It would still be subject to the minimum 20 feet for the driveway. It's just whether or not that driveway is curving, whether or not that house could come down to within 10 feet of the right-of-way, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Typically, it comes 20 feet outside that garage door, and then it turns and goes down the street, so you get way more parking in that
side less area than you do in a typical.
And is the setback the structure or driveway?
The setback is to the structure, but there's also a separate minimum 20-foot setback to the garage.
Brandon, sorry.
No, that's okay, because we're playing Tetris up here, and I love it. what other type of product should we consider in this setback? Because you bring up a good point. I mean, a variety of product is good, and if we're doing minimum setbacks and we're going to eliminate certain types of footprints that we can have there, we should at least explore that a little bit.
Well, I think there's just three potential scenarios. There's your front load garage that's straight in.
Okay.
And that's where we already have a minimum 20 feet, but the house can go closer than that. Alley load really wouldn't affect this. Right now we've got a minimum 5-foot rear yard setback to an alley loaded garage.
Okay.
That's not proposing to be changed. And then this scenario where you've got a kind of a curved side load garage.
I differ in your opinion. This wouldn't change alleys. I believe that this would entirely make alleys unfeasible. The problem, alleys are already problematic because you're taking away half the backyard. Now you're shoving the house back into that backyard too. You're never going to see another alley volunteered. I don't think you will anyway, but you might. It's just, it makes it really, really difficult to make an alley work. An alley, and frankly, an alley should only be on a smaller lot. An alley would be good for that higher density zone of it, not on these bigger lots.
Yeah, I think it was more where I thought the alleys would make sense where the cottage is.
Yeah.
So was there something that we should amend here to accommodate our L house?
This would be up to the Planning Commission, but you could say a house front yard setback may be reduced to 10 feet, or 10 feet may apply to side load garages.
Mm-hmm. Or you can make the lot bigger.
Planning Commission want to make a motion on that, or?
Yeah, I'll make a motion on that to include that, to amend the setbacks to accommodate for a house setbacks. However, the correct engineering way to.
So is your motion about 10 feet or?
The 10 feet would allow us to accommodate the L house, correct? Mm-hmm. So then yes.
Okay.
So, but it's a 10 feet, provided it's an L-shaped design, or however that wording plays out. And I agree, I don't think the alley one really makes more sense. It makes more sense on high density, so I don't know if we really need to, unless other commissioners think differently, of course.
Is that house typically a two-story home, John, a side load?
Yeah.
On top.
So there was a motion on the table. Yeah. Is there a second, or does it die?
I'll second that motion.
Any comment?
I guess, are we firm on the 20 for single family dwellings, I guess? So no. That was just recently changed. That was.
That's in the
proposed.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're not deciding on that one.
No, I understand. That's just what I wanted to kind of be clear on. Okay.
So the motion is to allow a minimum setback of 10 when it's an L-shaped or side entry garage. Is that correct, Brandon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
That, you know, if you want to put a limitation on that, I mean, if, like I said, if it's only 10% of the lots, or that would still be an important element. Instead of saying, you know, you could do this, but then almost all of them could be that way. And that's not that either.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
That's your motion. Is that something that you want to
amend?
Either restate or somebody can make a friendly motion.
all routine, unless somebody wants to make a friendly amendment.
But somebody can make a friendly amendment to it, to add to it, or you can restate it.
Yeah. You get a friendly amendment, or I'll restate.
Up to you.
Friendly.
I can make a friendly amendment to limit the these shaped side entry shaped or side entry garages to 10% of the proposed development.
Is that okay?
We have a motion to amend the current motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any comment?
My only comment now that it's on the table is 10% enough. Because I'm looking at this going, wait a minute, if I have 100 homes, only 10 of them can be that way?
Yeah.
What if there's a greater market for that house shape, or what if the lay of the land would be better to have it as 50%?
Or 25.
Or 25.
Yeah.
So maybe it would be
let's scrap the whole amendment.
Withdraw. Yeah, just restate your friendly amendment and we'll go from there.
Withdraw.
I move to withdraw my amendment or friendly amendment. Brian, you can, or Brendan, you can do what you want with yours.
I'm going to withdraw my motion if I can. I know there's a second there.
All right, we're starting from scratch.
Yeah. Scratch. Because maybe it's instead of a minimum of 10%, we say with no more than X percent. Does that logic make sense? So we would have the wording such that the L-shaped houses, if they're designed, would have a minimum setback of 10 feet, provided that any development would not exceed, say, and I'm just using this as an example, 50% of the houses in that development would not exceed the L-shaped design or something like that.
Up to 25% of the lots may have a setback of 10 feet for the front setback of 10 feet for the purpose of side entry garages.
So 25 out of 100 homes could be like that. Okay. Does that seem like enough?
Is there a second?
I'm just putting it out there.
That's a lot.
Is it?
That's a lot.
We never do that many.
Okay.
Somebody else might.
You remember, the product you're going to get, people are going to go to the minimums, the majority of them. There are developers out there that take a look at it and say, this doesn't make sense,
sure,
and we'll do what looks good. So remember anything you do. So if you put it to 25, imagine what 25 is going to look like.
Well, that's what I'm trying to remember, because I know a community in Bozeman, Montana, that actually has almost every other house is an L-shaped house or an offset house, and the community doesn't look bad,
okay,
in my opinion. And then there's front-facing houses, and then there's L-shaped and so forth. But honestly, I don't know what the percentage is. I'm just envisioning it in my head.
I mean, it is a community, you know, that you would see as rural. I mean, Bozeman
is outside of Bozeman, so
okay,
it is rural.
Right.
It's a newer community, so it would be, it's a newer community. So I've got a motion. Do I have a second before we go any further? Oh, did you vote? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Well, he rescinded his motion.
I
thought you were restating it right there.
No. I was putting that out there because I was trying to figure out what's the better angle, minimum 10% or do a maximum no more than. But to a point that was raised.
My seconds. You know, Al, these holes aren't rural anyway. I mean, rural is...
What, and that's a, not, yeah, but the look and suburb. Feel. Yeah, suburb.
Yeah, you use the wrong term.
The most common application for this for us is corner lots where there's a street going down. So, you know, 10 for us anyway, 10% is a reasonable.
And that's from a developer's perspective, from a home buyer's perspective. I personally, I don't like my garage facing the street, right? So I like the garage hidden. And if I can't have a detached garage out in the back, this accommodates that type of feel, just from a consumer perspective. But.
I'll tell you, I speak as much for the consumer as anything else because I stand in your business.
I'm here
representing my future buyers. As much as anything.
Absolutely. And I wasn't meaning to imply that you didn't.
I think the most important part of doing this, though, is to allow the flexibility in what they look like from the road. That while we're trying to maintain a character, if you go in and the only house they can build is the exact same house in that entire development, that's what they're going to do. And by adding that, it gives the flexibility to have a little bit more variation, which is better for maintaining kind of a unique feel so that you don't feel like you're smack dab in the middle of Snoqualmie Ridge.
Exactly. So is 10 out of 100 homes enough?
How many corners?
20 is a nice, easier to calculate.
20 is a nice, easy number to calculate. Let's stick with the 5 principle.
And 25 is a factor of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally. Can I ask you a question? You've been building homes around here for a long time. When did you start building these? Because I know years ago, or at least some of the developments, there are no houses shaped like that.
Yeah, because the front yard setbacks used to accommodate it. Okay. And I don't know when it started to accommodate it, sometime in the 90s.
Okay.
In Forester Woods, it didn't accommodate it.
It was changed the last time we changed the
Yeah,
I was on the commission when we did that.
It was
yeah.
changed like in Issaquah and Sammamish is where kind of the trend started, where we first started. Actually, the first place it showed up was in King County. In rural King County here, your front yard setbacks are 10 feet.
Okay.
On 5-acre lots. So you never see that.
Right.
It's hard, right? So
makes no sense there, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I guess just what I'm trying to look at is the bigger picture, right? I mean, this seems to be a recent trend, relatively, 15, 20 years, where, you know, I mean, if we're looking long-term, you know, preferences and housing styles change over time. And I guess something I learned is oftentimes that's based on the dimensions, you know, that we put out there that are approved. But, you know, wanting to accommodate it, you know, just the change in style that, mm-hmm. that's going to happen over the course of a generation or longer.
A big part of just context of why this became popular is there's been this move, which I agree with, of de-emphasizing that garage, right?
Yeah.
So it used to be you'd have that box, and then you stick the garage in front of the box. And so you drive through a neighborhood, and pretty much the what you see is the front of the garage that's sticking out there 10, 15 feet in front of the rest of the house. So conceptually, the planners and the industry, the consumers are like, how do we get rid of that? You know, how do we build that garage back into the house so it doesn't, you're not emphasizing the garage. So what happens is the front face of the house and the garage moves back so it's flush with or even, I think the regulation in North Bend has it back recessed 5 feet
yeah.
into the house. But what that does, it shoves it back into the living space. So then you don't have that living space back there. It used to be the garage was in front of the house because it enabled you to play on the inside of the house. Now you shove the garage into the house and it messes up the architecture, the space planning on the inside of the house. So this solution with the side entry garage completely eliminates that particular problem. It gives you amazing floor plan, space planning on that first floor that you don't get with the garage tucked back into the house.
Oftentimes the garage, as you're seeing there, actually about half that space is the garage. The rest, the left might be part of a family room or something,
right.
A revolving garage.
So what's the number?
If we're all good with 25, I feel fine making that motion. I was just looking for everybody's perspective on that.
Makes sense to me.
Dick?
I'm fine with 25%.
Okay. And then we just want a huge lot.
Wait till land use.
Yeah.
So you want to make
yeah.
a motion?
Okay, so I move that we amend the front setback to accommodate to 10 feet to accommodate L-shaped house designs provided that the number of L-shaped design houses in any given development does not exceed 25%.
So motion, do I have a second?
A second. Okay. And just to clarify, your definition of an L-shaped house is a side entry garage?
Yes.
Okay.
Got it, Mike.
Yeah, just can I restate it just
yes,
to make sure that what I have written is consistent with your intent. Up to 25% of lots in a development may have a front setback of 10 feet for the purpose of side entry garages.
Yes, that's brilliant.
Okay.
Any comments? comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Boom! We did it, guys.
Okay.
Got a motion on the books.
Well, thanks for your consideration.
That was a good call out.
Okay, so the next one we have to move on is the 15 versus the 16, right? Well, the current proposed is 5 and 10.
Well, no, that's staff recommendation.
Yeah, in the draft ordinance, it's 8 foot, 8 foot for total 16.
And I know you just went to 5s for 5 and 10, just for easy
calculation. Yeah.
Okay, so why not?
I don't understand. Unless the people who are doing the measuring can't carry one, I don't understand why it's a problem.
It's the people in the drafting room have a ruler that's this big.
Yeah. Seriously. When I sit down with the planner,
the guys come in fives, not
the guys. The guys on the ground have a problem figuring it out. I don't get that.
Well, why not 20 instead of 15?
20 feet?
Just a mix, yeah, 20 total.
I think, again, from the planning perspective, that is getting pretty low density at that point.
Okay.
You're spreading things out quite a bit. And
too much?
Well, from a planning perspective, that's getting pretty spread out, and that's going to affect affordability, and it's going to make it extend out the amount of service facilities that you're having to provide. Your sewers are going to be that farther apart. Your electric lines are that farther apart.
Okay. No, thank you, because it's great that you proposed this, because the city has that, so I just want to know what the alternate decision, if we go higher, if we go lower, and if there's intelligence behind that, and clearly there is.
So. But you're talking maybe 600 square.
How is it more sewer? We have a sewer line going from 1,000 feet. How is it any shorter if you have less houses, or any longer if you have less houses?
It just depends on the shape and size of the lot, but if you're widening out the side setbacks, you're widening out the space between each house, and if you're looking at 100 homes, that can add up to an additional cost. Additional cost for the developer to install it, additional cost for the city to maintain it.
So, Mike, does this make sense? If you have 100 homes under the current guidelines, and under 8,500 square foot lots, you might have 75 homes, and so the cost, while the distance is the same, the cost is more per each owner because there's less owners to share. Is there other impacts than that?
Well, the long-term cost to the city, and this is not going to be substantial because we're not talking about enormous differences, but the more line that you have is the more infrastructure that the city has to maintain long-term.
But there is a big cost to the city because in what you're talking about, you're reducing density by 20%.
Right.
And making the side yard setbacks bigger increases the lot width. And lot width, much more than lot area, dictates density. So, you know, I'd much rather have a 10,000 square foot lot and 15 foot side yards than 8,000 square foot lot and 20 foot side yards, because 20 foot side yards will result in us having 70 foot wide lots.
Well, in the current configuration, it is 5-10. So you're going back to what we had and what was originally in the...
Only on one side, but 15 feet total. So you're still expanding it by 10 feet.
Oh, okay. That's where it is. 5 and 10, 15 feet total. That's why I was confused.
You were going to say something?
I don't feel like I'm following.
So the comparison between the current to the proposed...
No, I understand that. I don't understand, like, the example that you use. Instead of having 100 houses along the line, with the change in specs that we were talking about, now they have 85. It would seem like the city's maintaining less.
No, we're maintaining more facility per less home. So we have the amount of sidewalk, the amount of street along that length doesn't change.
Right.
There's fewer homes that are paying taxes to serve that.
That's
the line.
Okay. Okay.
Or paying more in taxes.
So we still need to move on the 15 amendment. So did you have that statement written down? So I'll just read that instead of trying to be fancy with my
life. Jamie's memo here.
Oh, come on.
Where's that 1 foot go?
Where's that 1 foot go? That's
yeah.
Just
to the... It disappears.
Yeah,
there.
It disappears.
So where does that 1 foot go after you get down the end of the street? How much feet do you actually have left over?
It totally depends on the development.
Well, what happens to it?
What happens to...
How's it used?
Well, there is no 1 foot, so we're either considering whether or not it's 16 for each lot
or
15 for each lot.
So
and the developer is going to develop his lot count and his layout based on what he can do for side yard setbacks, which is going to depend on the dimension of the overall plat and sensitive area constraints.
Yeah,
things
a
like
deeper
that.
Closet on the one side of the house.
Jeez.
Mike, what is some guidance on, I guess, a fire perspective when you have 5 feet versus 10 feet or 15 feet? What's the difference in?
Nothing. All of that is per fire code. You can have a minimum of 8 feet, I believe it is. John probably knows better than me what the minimum fire separation is.
Less than 10 feet, you have to have a firewall that you can go down to. Got to have a firewall if it's less than 10.
From a fire service perspective, they want more and more and more and more.
Which is more windows on.
So I put that hat on.
You have a 1 hour wall, no windows if it's less than 10 feet.
So you have two holes with no windows if you're closer than 10 feet.
Can you just confirm when you were drawing up on the board, you could have a 5 foot and a 5 foot neighbor? And then they could each have 15 feet on either side, so your minimum is 10, so that means they will have a firewall.
You don't need one.
No, because right now that's what we're already at, is the 5 and 5, and you don't need a firewall unless you're closer than
you'd
that.
Still have 10 in between. Here.
It's the structure, not the property line.
Yeah, but it's 5 feet from the...
Well, no, the structure is structure, right?
Yeah.
So if there's a minimum 5 here and a minimum 5 here, that's a total of 10.
But they also allow 18-inch intrusion into that 5 feet for, like, a fireplace. And when we do that, that has to be a firewall.
Yeah. That makes sense. I can make this motion unless somebody else would like to. Once we're done. Okay.
This is the hard part of that big chair. That was my favorite part of the meeting. So
So I move that we accept staff's proposed changes of Ordinance 1530, Exhibit A, to have the side yard setback amendments that were propose that we accept the changes to Ordinance 1530, Exhibit A, to have the minimum side yard setbacks be amended to have a minimum of 5 feet one side, but 15 feet total.
A second.
Any comments? I'm going to say, from my perspective, I would prefer a minimum of 10 foot with 15 feet total. I just prefer that extra space for, one, either you're planting, it requires no fencing, you can have more openness in your neighborhood. So,
can I ask you a question on that then? So are you saying that, because a minimum of 10 feet with a 15 foot total, the way I read what you're saying is, then in the scenario that we've drawn there, mm-hmm. only one, if one house is 5 foot, then the next house has to be 10 feet away from that. Because you can't have 10 and 10 be apart, right? And I don't understand how that would work.
If it's a minimum 10 foot, you're going to have 20 feet total.
Total, yeah, because you're still going to have that 5 foot when you have a total of 15 foot. So what I hear you saying is that if one side is 5 foot, then the adjacent house has to be...
That might explain
it. Has to make up the difference.
Has to make up the difference.
Yeah, there's 10 feet from there to there.
So that we wouldn't have that 10-foot, that scenario right there that's on the board would never happen.
Are you suggesting instead of a setback, you're talking about a building separation distance?
How is it different when you have the setback from the structure to be a building separation difference, I guess? That would be my first question.
Because it's just measured against the property line. So that you could have, under the scenario that we're talking about, under your motion of 10 feet separation, you're going to have bigger on the other sides. Another way to measure it, and from the reviewer's standpoint, this is a mess because you have to hold a file to figure out what the other one was. You could provide a building separation minimum, but that would be difficult to deal with. Difficult probably for the applicant and difficult for the reviewer.
And unfair to the other homeowner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in your scenario then, if somebody did the square configuration on the right, every house, if that was the first lot, would then be 10-5, 10-5, 10-5. So then we kind of find ourselves back into this geometric symmetry where space gap, you know, large space, small space. You see what I mean? So that staggering, like a step that goes not up or down but straight across, would now exist from the street's perspective. Whereas if you go with the 5-10, the builder has the flexibility to either have 20 feet between the buildings or 10 feet, or maybe go in the middle and do the 8. You know,
it's because I was afraid to go higher.
Well, that's what I was asking. What happens if we go above 15?
Yeah.
What are we getting into? You know, what was the intelligence behind the 15? Mm-hmm. I mean, was it just arbitrary? Do the guys with the ruler just don't want to deal with it, or is there some costs?
Just for
we've got a motion and a second, so that was my comment. Any others? Call the question.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries.
Dick, were you, abstaining?
No, I was in favor.
Okay.
That's three.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. What did you say? Call the question?
Yeah, call the question is to end the debate.
I see.
And vote.
That was good to me. Thank you.
And Gary, you had also voted in favor, or you?
I didn't. It wasn't necessary because it was majority.
Okay.
Is that the current rule for the chair? I don't have to.
I thought you had.
I thought everybody did vote. You had to.
You can abstain, but.
You can abstain, yeah. But I think as a chair, you're still part of the committee. You need to weigh in.
Aye.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, maybe we should have a class in Robert's career.
Yeah.
At some point. I haven't done it since I've been here, and I know there's a lot of confusion.
Well, we're already breaking into more formality than we're typically with
motions.
So.
Yeah,
we leave all that stuff for you big guys over there.
Yeah.
A couple of things I'm looking for before I leave. I can, you know, use in that place.
Mike, I will make a motion under minimum lot size on page 2 for LDR to have the minimum lot size of 8,500 square feet instead of 8,000. Or average lot size, 8,500.
Minimum average.
The average lot size, 8,500. Page 2.
Oh,
I don't know
why that's
on page 2. I don't want it.
So just to kind of throw, is now the time for discussion?
It needs
a second first.
I'll second it. Just to.
Questions? Comments?
Give it your best shot.
Did you have a...
I don't know. Before I make a decision on how I want to weigh in, I mean, I'd like to look at this and kind of see where that compares.
So I'm thinking about what I put as an example up on the board, and I'm thinking about the average home size being built at 2,900 square feet and what that lot looks like. Having the side yard variation and more than the minimum rear yard or front yard, so you're getting a little more green space for that home. But you're talking about 60 feet? Well, no. I need a calculator.
What are you trying to calculate?
75 plus 20 plus 25.
Going 75 foot wide by 120 foot deep to get to 8,500? Is that your math?
No, so what I'm saying actually is maybe that's not sufficient, but maybe it is.
That 8,500 is not sufficient?
Sufficient for what purpose?
Yeah. 15. If you had 15 feet, and so it's 20 feet on the sides. 20 feet additional, so that's 60 times 120.
Well, the Planning Commission just passed the motion for the 15-foot total.
Yep. Okay, yeah. So, based on that, yeah, I think it would all fit.
Okay, so then let's talk about the average lot size versus minimum lot size. So the motion that you have was to make it the average lot size within a development be 8,500 feet, not the minimum lot size for each lot to be 8,500 feet.
Correct.
Okay. Right.
The minimum lot size, at least according to the proposed change, is 7,500.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay.
But what would functionally happen to that?
There's no maximum, correct?
There's no maximum.
If we drive that average up, what's it going to functionally do to that minimum lot size?
Reduce the number.
They're either going to have a couple really big lot sizes to offset and get the average up.
As a practical matter, it makes the backyard bigger. Just the way that the math works. If you've got a 50-foot wide, 50-foot deep house, and you go to a 7,500-foot lot, well, the 55 by 50 is 65 foot wide by 100 is the minimum you'd need. Is 6,000 square feet is what you'd need for that product. But if you push it to 7,500, then you got to make a lot. So you have a bigger backyard. That's what all my customers want, bigger backyard.
Yeah.
And just to caution again about the affordability issue. So the bigger the lot gets, the less lots you get per development. And the developer's going to make that up with higher home costs.
And to your point, if we increase the average, we're going to have to increase the number of larger homes being built. Right? I mean, we can keep the minimum at 75, but ultimately that average has to be accommodated somewhere.
And functionally, you get rid of the smaller lot sizes in order to maintain the average.
And we can kind of reevaluate the different zoning areas mm-hmm. when we get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the beauties of the current code is it does provide for variety and affordability. Cedar Falls is a perfect case example, and there are lots that met our standards, which were 60 by 120, and there were lots that were 50 by 100. And the 50 by 100 foot product, you know, sells in the 300s, and the bigger product sells in the big fives. So we have a lot of variety in that community. So while there's, you know, this need or want to have the bigger lots, there's also the whole back conversation about affordability.
Yeah.
Really throw that off.
affordability conversation out when you change, you know, this dramatically and get rid of the flexibility the current code has.
The comprehensive plan has a housing element that you'll be looking at later this year, but there are a lot of policies in the housing element that talk about maintaining housing affordability in North Bend, ensuring the appropriate mix of housing types and sizes to meet all needs within the population.
10 years ago, we went through this big exercise, maybe it was 8 years ago, how do we provide affordability in this community? And the conclusion was the only way you can do it is through density. That's where the whole cottage zoning came from.
Mm-hmm. And then that's why we have this emergency ordinance. Things are looking too dense, right? With some of the newer developments, right?
It's perception and look and feel, which was something that was considered quite a bit. And I think, you know, again, it's a tough job to do to be able to visualize what your product's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me that since we have 600 permits already, what was the count?
Yeah. It's about 600.
About 600 permits already coming in with the ability to go with the loaded, with the smaller lot size and the smaller
5,000 square feet.
Right. If we put this emergency ordinance in and go big, right, then anything that comes in now and forever, unless we revisit that when we're looking at our comp plan, will offset that 600 figure. Right, that's one way to look at it. So we've got a bunch of people that may be coming in to do smaller lot sizes, and then new people coming in are going to be forced to do larger lot sizes. So there's kind of a counterbalancing maybe in one aspect by passing it and going with a larger lot size. That's one element. The other thing to look at, the flip side of that, is if we go to the minimum that has been proposed by council, not Gary's, we're still kind of stretching that balance out, just not as extreme. And we'll still have the ability to come back later to explore even going bigger with that. Now, the benefit of both of those is that over the course of the year we'll be reviewing this, we'll also be able to see what permits are coming in, so we can see what sort of traffic is coming into the area. And, you know, so maybe the argument here is by passing it with either the minimum 8,000 or increasing it up 500 will be that offsetting component, and then in a year we'll be able to figure out if we should revisit that or make it larger or make it smaller. I'm just trying to figure out a way to.
So I hear the comment in the discussions, and speaking in favor of the motion, I'll say this, that I didn't go higher to compare other neighborhoods because we're not changing our parks requirement. And so you don't want to go large in this zone until we can really look at all the factors in it. I think that providing the diversity of housing is important so that we have, you know, quite a bit that's already being built under the existing code of 5,000 square foot minimums. I think the difference of 500 square feet, 10 by 50, that's play space, you know.
But that's on one lot, though. Not the whole development, because that adds up. That could be several different homes, depending on the size of the development, right? Ten homes?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
I'm trying to do the quick. It's too late for you. But so that 500 adds up.
I guess just to throw it out there, we don't want, I mean, if we want to maintain a rural character, and I may sound naive and whatever, it's on my mind, so I want to throw it out there. We don't want everybody to move here, do we? I mean, we don't want to make it so affordable that everybody's coming out here. You know, I mean, we do that at the expense of our rural character and the beauty that has drawn us here. You know, we want to continue to draw people here, but we don't want to make it so affordable that everybody can come out here.
I think to your point that it's nice that we have an opportunity to accommodate the growth. I think it's important, you know, to know what people are buying throughout Western Washington and the other counties and the prices in which they're paying. And affordability is not really in a lot of people's minds right now because the prices of houses are so high in every area. Is that?
Well, yeah, it varies considerably.
Seattle is bested its 2007 prices. I think I read it the other day in the airport. And Bellevue's on its way up. And so ultimately, people that can't afford to buy homes within that price range are going to look outward. And where do we lie? Outward.
But we're also considerably more expensive than South King County.
Right. Yeah.
There's people that commute from work here and that commute from South King County because the housing is more affordable.
But you got to think about the population and what activities they enjoy and what they do and why they're drawn here because we have such an abundance of great things to do around us.
Well, we're easy to reach and hard to leave. But if we don't have affordable housing, it will be easy to leave.
It's hard to reach.
I think affordable housing can be addressed in a variety of ways with other land use. I look forward to that opportunity. So we have a motion and a second.
You bring up a good point. I mean, because that is preservation of our rural integrity is part of the key here, which is why this whole emergency docket or whatever is in front of us.
Anything further?
Look at you wanting to move on.
Got it?
What's the motion?
The motion is to amend the average lot size to 8,500 square feet instead of 8,000.
I'm going to vote against that. 23% greater as it is. Adding 500, that's just 30% greater. But that 7% added on, I think, is going to push us into the rate of unaffordability. And I think going to 65, we're talking average now, not the max, but the average, that's a substantial give back, I think. So I'm satisfied we're going in the right direction with 8,000 square feet.
Okay, any other comment? And call the question. All in favor? Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Motion fails. All right, next.
Yeah, that was the staff amendment. So this will come back to you at your next planning commission meeting with the public hearing. Hopefully that will be, since you're now comfortable with what you're wanting to move forward, hopefully that'll be a fairly quick process. Take any comments from the city or from the public.
Now, one question, because I know that the 20th planning commission was canceled. We had 60 days from the emergency in order to do a public. Are we still going to make it within? So that would be, do you know the date?
That was as scheduled by Jenna.
Okay, so she already looked. Okay. Yeah.
That's right. We do have one airing on Tuesday, so you guys will have it. That's fine. Okay.
Yeah, we're scheduled on September 11th. 11th and 25th to discuss this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but okay. So that takes that into consideration.
We're at the end of the agenda.
I think we're good at the order.
Well, it's nice to have two faces.
Yeah,
look forward to working with you guys. Many long hours.
Yeah.
As we stumble through everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About to start.
I have a lot of work ahead this year with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. I move to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.